The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Welcome into the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. It has been one heck of a week in the storied history of the Chicago Bulls franchise. And here to talk about it is my good friend Kevin Bulldog Anderson. He's the head of our Bulls content team, longtime Bulls pre- and post-game producer. And right now he's running the point for the Bulls Outsiders. So it's good to have you with us today, Bulldog.
Thank you. But the really special guest today is not myself.
I know. So you want to introduce me?
No, I'll let you do it.
All right. Hey, Lee's back. He's back. Our good friend Vinny Goodwill, who is now the national NBA correspondent for Yahoo Sports, doing a great job over there. Nice to check in with you. We knew we would do it at some point this season, but I seem to remember a conversation we had before you left when you mentioned that Fred Hoiberg would not survive until December 15th, and you turned out to be quite the prophet there. You want to take your bows now?
Do you guys have, like, the applause type of thing, like, that we can phone in a little bit? I'll put it like this. Seriously, though, it's great to be back on with you guys because I miss you guys a lot. I would say that no one likes to dance on another person's misfortune, but knowing this organization and knowing their objectives this year, you had to know that Fred was operating on a short leash. And honestly, I thought the injuries would kind of, you know, buy him a little bit of time, but apparently nothing was going to save him from, you know, what the organization wanted to do at some point. I wonder why they even bring him into the season.
Vinny, you're very well plugged in. You and Chris Haynes had a very good piece breaking the news on Yahoo Sports that the Bulls players actually approached the Players Association about everything that's gone on over the past week. What more can you tell us about that, and just how ugly has this situation gotten at the Advocate Center?
Well, I think just basically about the Players Association thing, it wasn't necessarily about one thing or another. It was pretty much about the practicing after a back-to-back and the whole two-hour-long practices. And you guys know, you guys are there every day, you know, practicing for 2 hours last Monday, practicing for 2.5 hours, what was it, Wednesday and Thursday, then the back-to-back, and then you want to go again, you know, on a Sunday. Like, I know these guys are millionaires and everything else, and, you know, the Twitter sphere is saying, you guys lost by 50, you should want to practice. But, you know, at the same time, you know, that's why you have a union to sort of stand up and say, hey, look, there's rules in place for a reason. And I don't know if the Bulls necessarily adhere to it. Like, to some degree, I don't have a problem with if you want to say, hey, we need to get tougher, you know, we're not in shape, blah, 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 all those different tropes that Jim Boylan has used. In theory, I can't say I disagree with him to some degree, but the methods that you go about doing it when you're basically skirting protocol that's been in place for, you know, decades, you know, I have a problem with that, and expecting the players to just lie down and take that is something that I would take umbrage with as well.
Vinny, I know that some media circles are trying to portray this as a good cop, bad cop approach with Fred Hoiberg being the player-friendly, nice guy, and Jim Boylan being the taskmaster. But you were on the beat for a long time. To me, I thought Jim Boylan also was trying to be a nice guy in terms of trying to curry favor with the players. What was your take on Boylan's relationship with Bulls players during the time you were on the beat?
Well, I think it's about, you know, neither coach was going to be the same thing. You know, in terms of personality, Boylan likes pushing the envelope. He doesn't mind, you know, the conflict. He comes from that Greg Popovich, Tom Izzo type of, you know what I'm saying, type of philosophy where conflict isn't always a bad thing. So then when you look at him getting close with guys like Rondo, but also getting the towel thrown in his face and getting close with, you know, Jimmy Butler, because Jimmy Butler only respects a certain type of coach, and I think we can all understand how that works. You know, you can curry favor with a player if he's falling out with a coach, and sometimes that's just how it goes. That's not, you know, unique to the Bulls. Sometimes the head coach is the bad guy, and the assistant coaches have to be the buffers, and they have to be someone who, you know, takes the players to the side and makes sure that they're still on board. So I'm sure there was, you know, some of that there with Jim Boylan, but because he ran the film sessions, because he did so much in practices, it seems like he was going to be the bad cop because he wanted to assert himself in that way.
Vinny, there's been a lot of layers to the last 3 days with
Absolutely.
The Bulls. I mean, there's a lot of layers. And to your understanding, how close did they come to boycotting practice on Sunday? Was it just in the heat of the moment on Saturday night because of the loss, because of the comments Boylan made in postgame? Was it guys just emotionally reacting to it, going, you know what, F this, we're not coming to practice tomorrow, and anybody who does, I'm going to fine you? Or did they get beyond just the emotional reaction to it? How close, on a scale like 1 to 10, how close did they come to actually boycotting practice?
I don't know how close they actually came. I would probably say Bulldog, maybe about a 6 or a 7, because a lot of that is going to be fueled by emotion. But when you go to the steps of calling the Players Association and saying, hey, is there any recourse we have here? That means there's been a certain amount of foresight and thought that is going into this, and that, hey, our backs are against the wall here, and there's something we have to do about that. I don't think this was something that they were, you know, not planning on going through it. I think, you know, clearly Darnell Mayberry and Casey Johnson and clearly some of the other writers who are there on the ground have written about Robin Lopez and Lauri Markkanen, you know, sort of stepping in and trying to be the voice of reason and saying, hey, let's at least physically go there and have, you know, at least have a meeting and everything else. So I do think that, you know, this thing can snowball, you know, and you get on the group chat and, you know, it's 10:30 at night and you're embarrassed and you're frustrated and everything else, and then you got to get up the next day to practice. You had time to sleep on this and think about this. So I don't think this was necessarily a spur of the moment thing. I think to some degree they were trying to cover their bases and calling the Players Association and making sure that this was something, that there was things that they could do without, like, putting themselves in positions to get heavily fined or whatever. Like, I really think that they were serious about this. I don't think this was something where they just wanted to scare Jim Boylan, because I don't think they believe Jim Boylan's scared.
Jim Boylan's been a little bit clumsy in dealing with the media. You know, he's kind of changed his story, some of the details of what's transpired over the last few days. And it seems like at times he's a little bit uncomfortable in trying to deal with questions from the Chicago beat reporters. But the one thing he's been very consistent in saying is that he's in charge. This is not a negotiation. This is not a democracy. I'm the one who makes the rules, and players are just going to have to adjust to it. Can he maintain that approach over the long haul, or is he going to have to make some changes in order to avoid losing the entire locker room?
Well, to lose the locker room means you have to have them first.
Right, that's true. That's true.
So I'm not sure exactly who necessarily he has in his corner. I do think that the players have resigned themselves to believing that this is going to be a long season, and add to the fact that clearly he has the support of the front office and of ownership. Like, he doesn't have the name or the cachet to be using these type of tactics without having the endorsement, either tacitly or verbally, you know what I'm saying, to pull this type of stuff off. So for me, I think that this is who he is. When you say stuff like, you know, this is my show, I'm running this, you know what that sounds like to me? Sounds like a college coach.
Right.
It sounds like a coach from a different era of basketball that does not understand the way that things are. This is a players' league. And like, you can't, you're not going to do that. And just because you don't have a superstar on this roster doesn't mean that players are just going to blindly follow you. You have to prove something to players. You have to show a level of competency when you slide over those 18 inches. Just because you're running film sessions and you're doing stuff and you show an aptitude for basketball doesn't mean that players are going to just follow you. Let me let you tell y'all something. Every coach in the NBA knows basketball. You're no genius. And this isn't the military. This is guaranteed contract. This isn't the NFL. So I think he's going to have to adjust this whole thing. Maybe he's just trying to come in and take a hard line because Fred Hoiberg didn't do that, and that was not in Fred's, you know, chemical makeup. So he's just trying to be the reverse of that. But there's going to have to be some market correction at some point, because this is not 40 games into the season. this is a lot of time left, and these guys got to be around each other for a long time. So I'm going to be very curious to see how that message changes, because I guarantee you it better be inconsistent for his own sake. Like, there better be some, he said this in December, and it's really like this in February, or else I'm not sure how long he's going to last.
On a couple of different occasions, when John Paxson was asked to critique Fred Hoiberg's job performance, he would talk about that he needs to do a better job of holding players accountable. He mentioned toughness and competitive spirit and things like that. So it's clear that when they made this coaching change, they wanted to change the culture. They wanted Hoiberg to go in with this tough guy mentality, trying to hold players accountable, demanding that they do certain things the right way. Paxson and Gar Forman reportedly were in on a second meeting when the players and the coaching staff got together to hash out the differences that they had over the weekend. Do you feel like this is all orchestrated by the front office in terms of Paxson wanting to get these players to fly right?
Put it like this. I don't believe that they anticipate the players acting the way that they acted. But do I believe that they want to instill some toughness, that they want to, quote-unquote, as someone with the Bulls, you know, told me on Sunday night, shock them into place? Absolutely. Now, whatever happens from that happens. You find out who's, quote-unquote, with you and who's not. You know, you find out who's going to, you know, who's going to follow you and say, hey, guys, you know, let's do the wind sprints or the suicides or whatever, all that other nonsense that comes along with that type of stuff. To me, it sounds very draconian, to be perfectly honest. And we all know Pax is old school, and there's a certain place for that. And you do win with toughness. Like, Golden State is a tough team. Memphis is a tough team. You don't look at the top teams and say that they aren't tough. But that has to be part of who you are. You have to develop into that. I'm not sure if it's going to happen overnight or if even it's going to happen with these group of players. So when you ask me, do I think that it's part of the master plan, I think they had a blueprint of what they wanted this team to look like or what they wanted the process to start to feel like. And I think that some of these steps that have been taken in place, you know, they've seen some of the barking back with players and Jim Boylan through the season. This isn't new. Like, let me tell you guys something. As far as recent as beginning of the third game of the season, the first week of the season, guys, Jim Boylan was getting into it with guys in film sessions and practices and things of that nature. This isn't new. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of him sliding over 18 inches, and all of a sudden he has a lot more authority than Fred Hoiberg, you know, would like to assert. So now you add in John Paxson, you add in the organizational mandate. So, yeah, it's going to look like a shock. It's going to feel like a shock, but I don't think that any of the intention has been unintentional.
Vinny, they've made a big deal today, and really yesterday too, about forming this leadership committee. you already answered my question then. You have players who, as Boylan said, the players can then go to the leadership committee, and then the leadership committee can go into Boylan's office, and then they can talk about it like men. Is this going to have any impact at all, or is this just a party planning committee where it's in name only and it doesn't mean anything?
So tell me what a leadership committee could have done to stop Jim Boylan from calling a practice on a Sunday morning when it's already protocol that you're not supposed to call practices after back-to-backs. You mean to tell me the leadership committee could have talked Jim Boylan out of his tactics to get this team tougher?
Boylan says he's juiced about the leadership committee being formed.
Yes, and Barry Bonds was juiced too, right? Whatever. I think this is all window dressing. I think this is all to make the players feel empowered. I think this is less about the public perception. I think this is more about making the players feel that they are part of the process. But you guys said in the very beginning, Jim Boylan says, I'm in charge and I'm making the decisions. And in the next breath, he says, well, we have a leadership committee. Tell me, what successful NBA team has a quote-unquote, like, leadership committee? You got captains, you got vocal leaders, they don't have titles or anything like that. You need to delegate things in this way. If you talk to each other respectfully, if you have a certain level of structure and respect for each other, then you don't need all of these different layers. Like, they're making this more complicated than it needs to be. And to some degree, I feel like they're going to start insulting people's intelligence.
Your Bulls, your way, anywhere, anytime. Download the My Teams app by NBC Sports. Stream games and get the best Bulls coverage in Chicago at your fingertips. Download the My Teams app today.
You're listening to the Bulls Talk Podcast. Mark Schanowski and Kevin Anderson joined by our good buddy Vinny Goodwill, who's doing great work over at Yahoo Sports. We miss having him on the pre- and post-game shows because, you know, you kind of put the shock and awe into Kendall Gill during the during those shows. Now he's just kind of cruise control. He can say whatever he wants, Vinny.
Oh, so you guys mean to tell me that if I flew to Chicago, you know, just to check on the Bulls,
yeah,
from a national perspective, you mean to tell me you guys will keep that seat warm on the pre- and post?
100%.
So I could check Kendall.
Always waiting for you, Vinny, 100%.
Tell Kendall Gill to beware. just let him know that I'm coming back to reset the order, all right? I'm going to pull a Jim Boylan, all right? I'm the captain now, all right?
Vinny, here's the big picture question I think a lot of people in Chicago are wondering. Certainly you now take things from a national perspective, but you were here for several years working for us. What is the perception around the league, and I don't mean necessarily with the national media, from people you've talked to in other front offices, other teams, what is the perception of this Bulls organization right now?
I think the perception is, you know, where's the long-term plan and where's the actual accountability here? And I don't mean just in, you know, firing another head coach, installing another head coach. Like, where is the accountability up top with Jerry Reinsdorf and Michael Reinsdorf, Gar and Pax and all those guys? Like, I think certainly, I won't say they feel as emotional as the fans because the fans have a certain level of connection to this, but there is a certain level of, you know, guys have gotten fired for less as general managers, you know, and executives. So what, you got a couple draft picks, right? So what, you had a couple of, you know, injuries not go your way and you were a step away from this or that. Better front offices have gotten fired for less. And I'm not saying anybody should be fired because I don't take credit in that. And I like John Paxson personally and I get along with Gar Foreman. I've gotten along with them through the years. But just from the standpoint of what other people are saying, they're wondering what Jerry and Michael Reinsdorf are saying, are thinking, and what they're believing this long-term plan is, because a year into it, you got draft picks but nothing else.
Vinny, we've talked about this both on the air and privately. The only way this rebuilding program is going to bear fruit is that at some point along the line, the Bulls, either by trade or in free agency, can acquire a veteran star, an elite big-time player. And Jim Boylan, in one of his most puzzling comments, was asked about how could this whole episode affect their ability to attract a major free agent with the cap space that they're likely to have next summer. And he goes, well, the free agents that we want would want to practice after losing by 56 points. They would want to be pushed and coached hard. You know, and it's like you're almost burying your head into the sand with all the dysfunction that's being shown. They've now basically taken themselves out of the free agent derby for probably several years to come. How do they get themselves back in the game after an episode like this?
I'm not sure, because here's the thing. Great players like to be coached. Great players do not like to be insulted or embarrassed. And there's a fine line between that. And I'm hoping, for the Bulls' sake and for the franchise's sake, that Jim Boylan understands the difference between coaching a player or coaching him hard and making him better and embarrassing him for the greater good of some other cause. And I'm not sure if anybody really truly understands the difference there. And we all know that the Bulls have had a hard time attracting free agents in their prime, like 25 other franchises in the NBA. There's only like two or three of them that have consistently gotten the big fish. The Bulls have not been one of them. I don't think that's necessarily going to change. I think if anything does happen, it's going to have to be in the trade market, and you're going to have to discuss with said player, hey, this is what's happening. We hope that you resign or whatever. But if you have a negative reputation around the league, nobody's even going to want to come over via trade and sign with you for the maximum amount of money when he can make it more here in Chicago rather than somewhere else. So I think it's a reputation thing right now, and I think you have to remove some of the stink off of this franchise.
Zach LaVine was one of those players that you're referring to. He felt embarrassed by the comments that the head coach was making to the media repeatedly, questioning the team's conditioning, questioning the team's toughness, questioning the team's competitive spirit, and he was especially stung by the fact that not once, but twice, Jim Boylan went to the high school move of taking all five starters out and putting five substitutes in, and then he let the starters cool their heels for the final 21 minutes of that franchise worst loss to the Celtics on Saturday night. And Zach basically told the media, you don't want to embarrass us. We're grown men. And that's something I think that it's hard to erase with one kumbaya meeting and trying to say everything's okay now.
Yeah, it's put it like this. First impressions usually last the longest. And as a coach, you almost have one chance to make an impression on a team. If you think about it, with Fred Hoiberg, it was how he handled the Joakim Noah situation. Remember that?
Yeah.
Where he said, well, Joakim volunteered himself to go to the bench. Joakim would not back him up. And that was him not knowing the player, and that was him not knowing the room. Now tell me how Jim Boylan, in all of his years of experience with, you know, Popovich and Tom Izzo, and Popovich subbed out all five players, so can I. It's a different you just because someone else did it doesn't mean that you can do it. Mark Schanowski can host the show like a genius. That doesn't mean I can. Like, everybody has their strengths, and that's not Jim Boylan's strength. And I'm not sure if he knows that. And if you're coming back to the room and you want to assert authority, which is fine, you're a head coach, be the head coach, be someone with a position of authority, but you have to also be someone that players follow and they have to trust you. And I'm not sure that trust factor is there when you pull guys after being outscored 5-3 in the first, 2 minutes of a third quarter, and then you say, I want to save their legs for practice, and you sit them for the rest of the game, and then when all hell breaks loose, said, oh, I really wasn't planning on practicing them like that anyway. Then what did you save their legs the last 21 minutes for in saying, I'm just saving their legs for practice? Which one is it?
Vinny, let's fast forward to July. Free agency starts. Assuming that there is no change in the front office or with the head coach of the Chicago Bulls, is what happened over the last 4 or 5 days, is that going to truly impact what they can do in free agency?
I'm not sure, to be perfectly honest. Like, if the Bulls are offering player X a bunch of money that no other team is offering, then maybe then that player may wind up coming. But here's why I was so adamant to you guys and to Cap, who owes me a steak dinner at this point.
Yes, he does.
This is why I was saying that they couldn't make the playoffs this year, because I was not going to see the positive development amongst the young players in an environment that at least is conducive to winning. So if you're a free agent and you're looking at that, you're saying, yeah, he's talented, but they just won 20 games. What's wrong there? And if you don't get to the bottom of it, if you don't figure it out, then I don't know that makes a difference that the Bulls have a big bag of money. Like, I don't know who rebuilds their team and goes from being a bottom third team in the Eastern Conference to becoming a high-level playoff team, unless you sign LeBron James, and there's only one of those on Earth.
You're really good at predictions, as Mark noted at the top of the show. So give me your prediction. Is Boylan the head coach next season on this team?
I would say no.
Is the front office in place? Give me another prediction. Is the front office in place as we know it now?
Is this a day that ends in Y?
I think we know what the answer is there.
Hey. Yeah, I think here's what I think about Boylan. I think if he stays on this hard line, and it's the end of the season, as we all know, you can have support from the front office while you're going through it, and you can turn around and they can have their fingers crossed, and you could be headed out the door because you realize that you've either made a mistake or that this did not go the way that you wanted it to go.
Do you think everything's resolved right now with this team? I know nobody's truly happy, but with this leadership committee, like, is the worst behind us?
Yeah, they're drinking margaritas now in Mexico City.
They are. They're singing Kumbaya and having margaritas and tacos. Is the worst behind this team, or is there deep underlying resentment that still exists?
It could be both. Like, okay, I'm a veteran of covering bad teams and a veteran of players decided, hey, we're not going to practice today. So I've seen the stages. Now, Jim Boylan is not John Kuster. He is not someone who's afraid of his own shadow. That was Kuster's big problem in 2011 in Detroit when a bunch of veteran players said, you know, we're not coming to shoot around. That's not this situation. But the commonality is players are fed up. They feel like they're not being listened to by anybody, and they're understanding the environment that they're in. So while Gar and Pax are certainly going to be in full support of Jim Boylan, and they should be that, at least to some degree, you're backing the players into a wall. So, yeah, I do think there's going to be lingering resentment. These things do not heal overnight. These guys are very prideful people. And if you remember, I think Joe Colley tweeted it yesterday. After the Kings were walking off the floor, they're laughing through the tunnel saying, you guys are going to have another 2.5 hours yeah. practice tomorrow. You think players want to hear that? If they're saying that as they're running off the floor, what do you think these ruthless competitors are saying on the floor? And every time that's reminded to them, how resentful that's going to make these guys feel. I don't know if it's going to be as bad as, we're not practicing today type of thing, but I don't think it's going to be smooth sailing from now on. I think it's just going to be an acceptance that this is just something they're going to have to ride out.
Yeah, when the Sacramento Kings are clowning you, you know that you've pretty much hit rock bottom. So, hey, Vinny, we really appreciate your time tonight. We look forward to catching up when you come into Chicago. And if we don't see you beforehand, happy holidays. Have a great Christmas. And we'll look forward to seeing you in Chicago real soon.
Hey, I appreciate you guys, Chicago. I do miss you. You are better than New York, trust me. I miss your restaurant. And Mark Schanowski come December 30th. I will be listening and taking notes, okay?
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. That's a lifetime goal. I get a chance to do play-by-play with Stacey King for the Bulls game in Toronto December 30th. I appreciate the good wishes. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm glad you'll be tuning in.
Hey, Vinny.
Yes, sir.
Go back to Chicago.
Hey, this is fun. I appreciate it. You guys have fun.
All right, that's the one and only Vincent Goodwill. We appreciate you listening to the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. You can find all of our shows at NBCSportsChicago.com/podcast. You can also listen and subscribe at Apple, Google Play, and Stitcher. Until next time, so long, everybody.